You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, and welcome to the Monday, March 11th edition of The Summit Daily. My name is Bryce Johnston. Today, we will be reading the following main articles. Avalanche officials warn of wind-loaded dangers after Breckenridge records 95-mile-per-hour winds by the Summit Daily staff. Ski patrollers at Keystone Resort renew efforts to unionize after failed attempt in 2021 by Cody Jones. Another lottery planned for Breckenridge workforce housing development aimed at the missing middle class by Kit Geary. And young snowboarder dies following crash at Keystone Resort by the Summit Daily staff, followed by miscellaneous articles. Our first story, 9 slides in 1 week. Avalanche officials warn of wind-loaded dangers after Breckenridge records 95-mile-per-hour winds. Story by the Summit Daily staff. The Colorado Avalanche Information Center is warning recreationists of persistent slab and wind-loaded dangers in the backcountry following a snowstorm that brought heavy snow and high winds to the region. Officials say people recreating in avalanche terrain are unlikely to receive a warning before triggering a large avalanche due to the current conditions in the snowpack. By this late in the winter, the persistent weak layer of concern is usually buried too deep to easily trigger, Colorado Avalanche Information Center officials said in a Facebook post on Monday, March 4th. This is not the case this season. Very large, deadly avalanches are breaking on the persistent weak layer that formed in early February. This is especially true in much of the Central Mountains and Gore Range. The center pointed to a photo taken near Univa Peak between Summit and Eagle Counties near Vail Pass, where an avalanche broke across an entire ridgeline. The most recent form from the weekend blew dust and snow across the state's peaks, adding a layer of danger to the current conditions. This storm came in with a significant amount of wind with gusts well into the 60s and a 94-mile-per-hour gust near Breckenridge early Sunday, the center wrote in a social media post on Monday. Branches were flying through the air, trees were falling down, and chimneys were getting blown off roofs. You can easily trigger an avalanche on wind-loaded slopes near above tree and above the tree line. Avoid wind-drifted snow where avalanches will be larger and easier to trigger. There have been at least 9 avalanches in the past 7 days recorded in the region that encompasses Eagle and Summit counties, according to field reports filed with the Colorado Avalanche Information Center. For more information and current snowpack dangers and conditions, visit avalanche.state.co.us. Our next story, ski patrollers at Keystone Resort renew efforts to unionize after failed attempt in 2021. Story by Cody Jones. After many weeks of worker-led organizing efforts, ski patrollers at Keystone Resort are seeking to unionize. Representatives have formally announced that they have chosen to file for a union representation election with the National Labor Relations Board. Roughly 70% of Keystone's eligible ski patrollers signed union cards and are organized as the Keystone Ski Patrol Union into CWA Local 7781, the United Professional Ski Patrols of America. The patrol has also asked Keystone management for voluntary recognition of their union. Organizers say a lack of affordable housing, stagnating wages, and limited resources are behind the push to unionize. Corey Caven, a union organizer and fourth-year ski patroller at Keystone, said these issues have caused ski patrollers to not see a viable future in their work as they navigate opening and maintaining terrain, mitigating avalanches, evacuating lifts, responding to emergencies, rendering medical care to injured guests, and more. Tenure is one of our biggest issues because we live in a fairly expensive place and we don't get paid a terribly large amount of money to do what we do, Caven said. It is hard to keep people on. The hope is that, with some of the changes, keeping people around would be a more realistic thing. As trained workers who risk their safety every day, the Keystone Ski Patrol Union was formed as a way to give patrollers a seat at the table to discuss wages, benefits, trainings, and more. Keystone Ski Patrol is the fifth ski patrol this season to file for union representation, joining Eldora, Palisades Tahoe, and others. The union campaign comes 3 years after the 2021 unionization effort, which failed by one vote. This time around, the unionization push has been better received by Keystone's management, giving hope to the union advocates at Keystone, Caven said. We have had some response from management, and currently, the response we have been receiving has been better than it was in the past, Caven said. I think that may come with the fact that there are other ski patrols within our company that have unionized over the last few years since we made that attempt in 2021. According to Caven, talks with management have so far been different than back in 2021. This time around, management has had an open dialogue with the Keystone Ski Patrol Union, unlike the first unionizing effort 3 years ago. Returning to the table better organized and with more support, the Keystone Ski Patrol Union hopes that this time around, the union will be fully ratified. It is hard to say for sure, but it feels as though we are a little bit more organized this time around, and there is a little bit more backing around some of our more senior staff, Caven said. There was some disconnect previously. In response to Keystone Ski Patrol Union's effort to unionize, Keystone Resort General Manager Chris Sorensen offered a statement regarding the resort's effort to support its ski patrollers. We care deeply about our team members at Keystone Resort and appreciate all that they do, Sorensen said. While we respect our employees' right to seek to organize, we genuinely believe that the best way to foster an inclusive culture where all employees feel empowered and heard is to have a direct, open relationship. We will continue to do the right thing for our team members, regardless of a union. My leadership team and I are committed to our employees and continuously improving the employee experience, which in the last 2 years alone has included significant investment in wages, benefits, mental health resources, development opportunities, and more. Specifically, this group has seen their average wage increase by 49% over the last 5 years. I'm proud of the strides we've made together so far, and we're committed to continuing this work. To get more information and follow along on Keystone Ski Patrol's progress towards unionizing, visit their Instagram page at instagram.com/KeystoneSkiPatrolUnion. Our next story, another lottery planned for Breckenridge workforce housing development aimed at the missing middle class. Stables Village's second lottery phase opens for application March 15th and includes 22 housing units. Story by Kit Geary. Breckenridge's housing development targeted at people who economically are considered the missing middle is rolling out another lottery for 22 units that include duplexes, triplexes, and single-family homes. The development, the Stables Village, is being built on a parcel that was previously the Breckenridge Equestrian Center that is adjacent to the Lincoln Park neighborhood and near the Wellington Bike Park. 15 units of the 61 units in the development were claimed in the first round of the lottery. In the upcoming lottery, 8 duplexes, 2 single-family homes, and 12 triplexes are up for grabs. Breckenridge Housing and Child Care Manager Lori Best said a move-in date for these units could be in early 2025. The lottery to secure a spot will open March 15th and close March 28th with a drawing happening April 4th. There will be an open house March 20th from 5 to 7 p.m. with a presentation at 5:30 p.m. at the South Branch Library in Breckenridge. The triplexes range from around $381,000 to $551,000. The duplexes range from around $556,000 to $709,000, and the single-family homes cost around $800,400. This isn't necessarily for first-time homebuyers, Best said. This is ideally targeting folks that have been here a while, meeting their needs so they can stay in the community. In its entirety, the development includes 5 single-family homes, 38 duplexes, and 18 triplexes. Best said, alongside affordability, sustainability is also a major objective of this development, and its units will be all-electric, solar-powered, and carbon-neutral. Addressing the gap in housing supply for the middle class has long been a discussion in Summit County, and last February, county officials held an open forum to hash through the issue. Summit County Commissioner Tamara Pogue said with the median price of a single-family home in the area moving around $2 million, efforts such as these are paramount to addressing the middle-income housing gap. She said the group that encapsulates the middle class, frontline workers, teachers, and law enforcement, to name a few, are essential to keep in the community. We want those folks to stay here. We want them to take on leadership positions at the organizations that they work for, Pogue said. But unfortunately, those folks are being squeezed out by the fact that our market rate housing is now prohibitively expensive. As this development is aimed at the workforce, applicants for the lottery must work in Summit County for at least 30 hours a week on an annual basis. Similar to the last lottery, two different groups get priority, or the ability to throw your name in the hat more than once, in this upcoming lottery. Those who work in the upper blue and those who have lived in the community over 10 years get an extra ticket. People that meet both qualifications, in addition to being an employee in Summit County, have the opportunity to have 3 tickets in the lottery. The previous lottery for this development, which also included duplexes, triplexes, and single-family homes in a similar price range, saw somewhere in the ballpark of 200 applicants for 15 spots. Staff anticipates this lottery could look the same. The triplex units are capped at 140% of the area median income in this development. Those interested need to fill out both an employment and an income application when applying for the lottery. An applicant cannot own any other property in Summit County in order to be eligible. The duplex and single-family units do not have an area median income cap, and only an employment application is needed. There is a max 3% annual appreciation cap on these units. Unlike the triplex units, people that own duplexes and single-family homes may own other property. 2 more lottery rounds for the development will occur for the 24 remaining units for those who did not find luck in the first 2 rounds. More information about the development and the lottery can be found at selectgroupres.com/stablesvillage. That's selectgroupres.com/stablesvillage. Our next story, young snowboarder dies following crash at Keystone Resort last Saturday. Story by the Summit Daily Staff. A 14-year-old snowboarder is dead following a crash with a tree at Keystone Resort on Saturday, March 2nd, around 9:20 a.m. The teen from Monument, Colorado, was transported to a hospital in Denver, Summit County Sheriff Jamie Fitzsimmons said in a statement Tuesday. The crash occurred on 2-sled run on Durkham Mountain, which is a green run near the Peru Express lift. A bystander witnessed the crash, and the teen was wearing a helmet, Fitzsimmons said. No one else was involved in the incident. Keystone Resort, Keystone Ski Patrol, and the entire Vail Resort's family extend our deepest sympathy and support to our guests, family, and friends, Keystone Resort Vice President and General Manager Chris Sorensen said in a statement. Our next story, new child care center launches in Copper with over 40 spots for infants, toddlers, and preschoolers. Mountain Sprouts Academy opens its doors less than a year after the project began, bringing much-needed service to local families and workers. Story by Robert Tan. A recently remodeled 3,000-square-foot space in Copper is now home to Summit County's newest child care facility. Dubbed the Mountain Sprouts Academy, the center, located in Copper Mountain's Central Village, opened its doors on February 28th with the capacity to take on more than 40 children, ranging from infants to preschoolers. For Abigail Tichin, a Copper resident who serves as the center's board chair, the opening couldn't come soon enough. "We especially are, I would say, a childcare desert here at Copper," Tichin said. "To be able to build a school within our community to support our employees and our community residents, it adds so much value that it's hard to put words to." As a member of two community organizations, the Village at Copper Association and the Copper Mountain Resort Association, Tijin said, and others worked for nearly a year to make the center a reality. After securing a roughly $600,000 state grant last March, organizers received funding from entities including the Summit County Government and the Summit Foundation to help push their project over the finish line. With a total price tag near $1.3 million, community leaders were able to deliver dozens of much-needed childcare spots in a fraction of the cost and time it takes to stand up a brand new facility. Tijin said she feels proud to be able to help the community, not just right now, but for years to come. Mountain Sprouts Academy director Courtney Drobick, who's worked in childcare in Summit County for 3 decades, said the Copper Center employs the Reggio Emilia philosophy, which encourages a bottom-up learning approach. "We see the environment as a third teacher," Drobick said, "so the way the environment is set up enhances the learning. Rather than look at screens, children engage in hands-on learning of their choosing, whether that be making art or playing a musical instrument. Teachers are trained to pick up on a child's interest and help foster that during their time at Mountain Sprouts. Staff also take advantage of the center's proximity to Copper Mountain with the ability to walk children to ski lessons, ride the gondola and go for small hikes around the mountain and village area. Play is essential, and all children learn through play," Drobick said. "They need to have access to all kinds of different experiences to help them grow." Alyssa Huizenga, who teaches toddlers at the center, said having a child-led learning model helps teachers understand children more broadly. For instance, how they're playing with a toy and then helping them build on what they're already doing, Huizenga said. Hannah Ganshaw, who also teaches toddlers, said the approach emphasizes respecting children. "I think kids are a lot more important than anybody gives them credit for," Ganshaw said. "Especially with this approach, it's very child-focused and paying attention to what they want, and it keeps them passionate about learning." Beyond nurturing a child's development, childcare is an economic driver that allows parents to work. Community leaders said this in turn helps parents to financially support their families in the high-cost county. Yet demand for childcare continues to outweigh supply, and even with new centers opening within the last year, hundreds of children remain on a wait list, in particular infants and toddlers. "The wait list numbers are daunting, but every little bit helps," Tijin said, adding that unlike other centers in the county, Mountain Sprouts will be open on Saturdays during the winter season. "We're really designed to support resort employees, and a lot of people work Saturdays here," she said. While Mountain Sprouts will prioritize Copper residents and employees, enrollment is open to all Summit County residents as well as residents of Lake County who work in Summit. Families are also eligible to apply subsidies to their tuition at Mountain Sprouts, which, based on the number of days enrolled, ranges from $500 to $1,700 per month for infants and toddlers, and $450 to $1,550 for preschoolers. The subsidies include 2 countywide programs, Summit Pre-K and Summit First Steps, as well as Colorado's Universal Preschool Program. A recent report from the social services organization Early Childhood Options found that more than 2 in 3 children enrolled in child care in Summit County receive some form of subsidy. As the center continues to bring on more children, its leaders hope that by keeping families enrolled locally, it will further build community in Copper. Just being part of this community helps the wider community see how competent children are and how capable and valued they are, Drobic said. Mountain Sprouts Academy is located in Snowbridge Square in Center Village at Copper Mountain Resort and will be open from 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday through Saturday. More information, including tuition rates and how to apply, can be found online at mountainsproutsacademy.com. Our next story, Treatment Trip. Lack of substance use resources in Summit County sends patients away from home. While officials have vastly improved behavioral health services in Summit County, a lack of sober living facilities and medical detox centers leaves residents without acute care options. Story by Ryan Spencer. Leaving Summit County was hard for Eric Turner, but he knew he needed help. After his first year in the mountains, his wife joined him in the high country, and the two were making a life for themselves. But Turner said his alcohol addiction had started to get out of control. Years into talking to a therapist about his PTSD, Turner said he had finally started discussing his alcohol problems with a counselor. Eventually, they began discussing inpatient treatment, an option that meant leaving the county. Inpatient treatment involves checking into a rehab facility and staying there for the duration of the treatment, often weeks at a time. Turner attended 2 inpatient treatment programs in Denver, then another program tailored for first responders and veterans in California. "That was extremely difficult for both of us, especially for my wife," Turner said. "She had to take over all the responsibilities at home. We were able to do phone calls a couple times a week, but other than that, the communication was pretty much cut off." While the behavioral health landscape in Summit County has grown more robust in recent years, there are still gaps in resources that force people to seek treatment outside the county. There continues to be a lack of services and providers in certain areas of care, including inpatient services, intensive outpatient services, psychiatric level providers, bilingual providers, and Medicaid providers, according to the Summit County Public Health Department's 2022 health assessment. Rudy Hornback, a clinical case manager for the Summit County Sheriff's Office who works to connect those incarcerated in the local jail with substance use treatment, said some of the resources that would be most helpful remain a pipe dream. "Sober living would be the number one thing that would be most helpful for a lot of people around here, I believe," Hornback said. "The other thing we don't have access to is inpatient residential treatment, and there's also no intensive outpatient treatment for men in this community." Many providers also don't accept Medicaid, Hornback said, putting higher-level services out of reach for those who have fewer resources. So when it comes time to connect a client with resources, she said the lack of available local options for certain types of treatment can be disappointing. "Those with deep ties to Summit County can feel disempowered when they have to choose between staying in the community or seeking help elsewhere. Even if people know there are resources like sober living, shelters, or inpatient treatment in places like Denver, Grand Junction, and Colorado Springs," she said many people still don't want to leave. "There is a really big resistance to leave this mountain lifestyle because they all came here for a reason. And some of them grew up here as well and don't want to leave either," Hornback said. "It's really unfortunate that those folks who do have such a big community connection to Summit County don't want to leave but aren't able to find a way to really be successful here." Even as the party culture in mountain towns can encourage drug and alcohol use, Summit County residents report difficulty accessing care. Summit County Commissioner Tamara Pogue described the prevalence of substance use disorders among locals as somewhat of an endemic that the county has only just started to make progress on in recent years. "Summit County has long struggled with substance use disorders," Pogue said. Residents often turn to substances as a coping mechanism, and that leads to us having very high rates of substance use disorder. Behavioral health, a term encompassing both mental health and substance use disorder, and recognizing their interconnected nature, has been identified in public health reports as a top priority for improving overall health and well-being in Summit County. More than a quarter of local respondents to a health survey reported that they or a loved one did not receive the mental health care they needed in the past 12 months, according to a Summit County health plan published in 2022. Nearly 1 in 10 respondents said they or a loved one did not receive the substance use disorder treatment they needed. There are many barriers to accessing care in Summit County, stigma being perhaps the biggest hurdle for many. Still, just a few years ago, the behavioral health landscape in the county looked very different. The Strong Future ballot measure that Summit County voters passed in 2018 created a dedicated stream of funds to help bring behavioral health providers to the area. The county also severed ties in 2021 with Mind Springs, its community mental health center, over concerns about quality of care. An audit later found life-threatening errors among a sample of Mind Springs outpatient clients. "We all know this has been a very long journey for Summit County," Pogue said. "We have had providers in the past who have not provided the level of service our residents have a right to expect." The Strong Future ballot measure created a mill levy on properties in Summit County, raising millions of dollars a year, about $2 million of which is dedicated to behavioral health services annually, Pogue said. To date, the Strong Future Fund has raised almost $15 million for behavioral health since 2018, according to county government records. But barriers to finding treatment persist. The mountain resort region that includes Summit County has some of the highest rates of residents without health insurance, creating additional hurdles to accessing care. In 2023, the region's uninsured rate stood at 12.5%, more than double the state average of 4.6%, according to the Colorado Health Institute. Since Strong Future passed and Building Hope was established, we've been able to move the needle on access to care, Pogue said. There are a lot of new services that didn't exist 5 years ago, but we still have gaps in our care. Building Hope in the Community. In the past decade, more than 80 people in Summit County have died by suicide. Building Hope, now the backbone of much of the county's mental health support, was founded in 2016 after a rash of local suicides. Among those was Patty Casey, a longtime Breckenridge resident with deep community ties who had kept her lifelong struggle with depression and alcoholism a secret. To honor her, Casey's family advocated for better mental health care and set up a memorial fund that provided the initial support for Building Hope. What came out of her death and the others was that there was not a coordinated system of mental health happening in Summit, Building Hope Executive Director Kellen Ender said. Substance use factors heavily into suicide, which is the eighth leading cause of death in Colorado, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The Centennial State has amongst the highest rates of suicide deaths in the country. Almost one-third of people who died by suicide in between 2016 and 2020 had a problem with alcohol, and about one-quarter had a problem with a substance use other than alcohol, according to a report issued by the Colorado Department of Public Health. Even more consumed substances around the time of their death, the state report found. Toxicology reports indicate that about 38% of those who died by suicide had alcohol in their systems, while 22% had consumed marijuana. Opioids were present in about 17% of suicide descendants, and benzodiazepines, such as Valium and Xanax, were present in about 14%, the report states. It is very rare that coroners see a suicide happen without some kind of substance on board, Ender said. Whether that means substance use was an issue or it gave liquid courage for the moment, it's certain that substance use, mental health, and suicide are very much enmeshed. In the years since Building Hope was founded, local suicide deaths, which once reached double digits almost annually, have dropped significantly, according to data from the Summit County Coroner's Office. From 2019 to 2023, suicides in Summit County declined by almost one-third compared to the previous five-year period, an analysis of the data revealed. Behind the scenes, Building Hope was worked to entice providers to come to the community, offering scholarships for clinical training and networking opportunities that help create bonds between providers, government, and nonprofits. The insurance landscape for mental health, especially, is extremely difficult, but Building Hope has worked with providers to increase the types of insurance that are accepted locally. While Ender acknowledged that continued work is needed around behavioral health, especially substance use, she said that there are more therapists and community resources in Summit County now than there were just a few years ago. Though its mental health scholarship program, through its mental health scholarship program, Building Hope has made counseling available for any local resident who needs it, providing 12 free sessions for those who lack insurance or aren't covered by insurance, she said. Anyone who wants therapy should be able to get it without having finances be a barrier, Ender said. If you live or work in Summit and you need help finding therapy, we can help you out. Readiness to change. The road to overcoming a substance use disorder is different for everyone. That's why public health officials and those recovering from addiction say having a wide suite of services available to the community is important to allow people to choose their own path. Over the past few years, Summit County has focused on creating a robust system of outpatient care, Pogue said. Strong Future funds have supported Building Hope, mental health, and substance use navigation services at the Family and Intercultural Resource Center, withdrawal management, or detox, through recovery resources, school-based behavioral health services, and more. We want to ensure whatever treatment really resonates to give a given person that they have that methodology or modality available to them, Pogue said. Medication-assisted treatment is one resource that is now available to help those with substance use disorders that weren't available just a few years ago, Pogue said. Medication-assisted treatment uses medications to manage withdrawal symptoms in combination with counseling to treat addiction. While residents had to drive to Denver to receive medication-assisted treatment in the past, the Front Range Clinic and Summit County Care Clinic now offer treatments such as buprenorphine and naltrexone to treat opioid addiction at locations in Summit County. But especially on the substance use side of behavioral health, there remains a lot of work to be done. There is a lot being done and a long way to go, Pogue said, and I think there is still a lot of work to help folks know that services are available, and if you're in a crisis, it's really hard to learn what is available. Michelle Marzo, a 30-year Summit County resident who runs a private counseling practice in Frisco, believes all clinicians need to be cross-trained in addiction. Therapy is often people's most direct contact with the behavioral health system, and people tend to build a sense of trust with their therapist, Marzo said. Because of how widespread substances are in society, and in the après-ski culture especially, therapists who don't do a substance use evaluation with their clients could be overlooking the underlying causes of the mental health conditions a person is exhibiting, she said. For example, a client who drinks 3 Red Bull energy drinks and smokes a pack of cigarettes a day may present signs of anxiety or another mental health issue, but unless a therapist is looking at substance use, they're not addressing the root cause, Marzo said. Understanding a person's substance use at least allows a therapist to talk about managing it with their client. When it is so ingrained in our culture that there's nothing wrong with it, people really have to sometimes be ready, and it's all about readiness to change with substance abuse, Marzo said. but we as providers can at least screen for it and put that idea in their mind through their counseling. With an abundance of therapists in the community, there are many more options for people to access care in Summit County today than there were 5 years ago, Pogue said. But amid a housing crisis, it is cost prohibitive to bring sober living or inpatient rehab facilities to the county. Still, Summit County continues to work on behavioral health. Last year, the Summit County government designated Eagle Valley Behavioral Health as its community health center. The county's partnership with the wholly owned subsidiary of Vail Health is expected to further expand the availability of mental health services locally and reduce barriers to accessing help. In 2025, Vail Health plans to open the Pre-Court Healing Center, a 28-bed inpatient behavioral health facility in Edwards that will provide care for adults and adolescents experiencing acute psychiatric crises. While still outside of Summit County, Pogue called the Pre-Court Healing Center and partnership with Eagle Valley Behavioral Health a really big deal for local residents. Behavioral health infrastructure in Summit County has ramped up in recent years, but there are still needs going unmet. Last year, the Summit County government allocated $2.5 million in Strong Future funds for behavioral health, but received $5.3 million in requests from community organizations focused on mental health and substance use, Pogue said. She said the demand shows that the county needs to redouble its efforts to access local, state, and federal funds for behavioral health. I think this speaks to the success of the model, as well as the need that we aren't able to meet, Pogue said. There just aren't enough dollars to plug all the holes we need to plug for our residents and what they need. Local Resource Guide. Building Hope Summit County is a community-wide initiative designed to create a more coordinated, effective, and responsive mental health system. The nonprofit provides mental health training, connectedness events, peer support, scholarships, and help navigating the behavioral health system. The following resources are some of the many services that can be found at buildinghopesummit.org or by calling Building Hope at 970-485-6271. Crisis Resources. Summit County Sheriff's Office SMART Program, the system-wide mental assessment response team, is a team consisting of a plainclothes Summit County Sheriff's Office deputy, a behavioral health specialist, and a case manager who respond to mental health-related cases, including suicide threats and welfare checks, to try to stabilize and de-escalate a situation. SMART responds to local emergency and non-emergency crisis calls. People in crisis can call 911 in an emergency, call Summit County's non-emergency dispatch at 970-668-8600 or Colorado's Crisis Services Line at 844-493-8255. Local Substance Use Resources. Alcoholics Anonymous offers 21 meetings in Summit County each week. Visit District17ColoradoAA.org, that's District17ColoradoAA.org, for more information, or call 970-245-9649 anytime to talk to a live person. Recovery Resources offers detox and withdrawal management services in Summit County. For more information, visit recoveryresourcescolorado.org or call 970-368-6502. Mile High Behavioral Health offers case management and peer-to-peer support in Summit County for trauma, substance use, and mental health challenges. For more information, visit milehighbehavioralhealthcare.org. Summit Community Care Clinic, a health center offering behavioral health services in Summit County, including options for medication-assisted treatment programs for substance use. For more information, visit summitclinic.org. Summit Women's Recovery offers an intensive outpatient program for addiction to women in Summit County. For more information, visit womensrecovery.com. or call 833-754-0554. Eagle Valley Behavioral Health, Summit County's Community Mental Health Center. For more information, visit valehealthbh.org or call 970-306-4673 to speak with a clinician. National Helpline. The Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration offers a treatment referral service at 1-800-662-4357 and confidential information services at 1-800-487-4889. Both services are available 24/7 in English and Spanish. Visit buildinghopesummit.org/resources for a comprehensive guide to resources available in Summit County. Our next story, how a Summit County DJ is staking his claim despite not being old enough to play most places. King Billy plays venues in Breckenridge and beyond, so long as they aren't a club or bar that serves only alcohol. Story by Kit Geary. It was a couple years back when Maddie Rimias got a gift that ended up changing her brother's life. Maddie got a mixing board to practice DJing, and her younger brother Billy couldn't stay away from it. She started off teaching him the basics, and he started liking it so much that the mixing board quickly ended up becoming just as much Billy's as it was hers. The sibling's mom, Karen Doherty, said Billy had always been musically inclined, yet it was surprising how rapidly he picked up DJing for someone whose education consisted of a couple tips from an older sister and YouTube tutorials. What started as a side hobby for his sister quickly turned into an obsession for Billy, and now he can't picture doing anything else but DJing for a career. It has been over 2 years since Maddie got the mixing board, and Doherty said Billy has since grown out of his sister's entry-level mixing board and upgraded to more advanced technology. Doherty said in addition to taking a deep dive into the world of DJing, she watched her son take a deep dive into the world of marketing. Alongside advancing his musical career, Billy began researching how to market himself and get his name out there. This proved to be more difficult for Billy than most DJs, since he was under 18 and wasn't old enough to play at most venues. Billy, whose stage name is King Billy, couldn't, and still can't, play clubs or bars that aren't also restaurants. Instead, Billy booked every opportunity he could to get, whether it would be graduation parties, end-of-the-year school events, and even spots like RMU in Breckenridge, which serves food, allowing Billy to play there. Maddie remembers one time Billy built his own makeshift stage and held a small music festival. He worked with the videography team at Summit High School and made the event into a music video. Billy still has to continue the grind of finding ways to perform while he's still under 18. Yet, with his 18th birthday just around the corner in early April, that will change soon. For Billy, it doesn't matter where he plays, he just wants to play. My biggest joys in life, personally, is just making other people happy and making their day, Billy said. So if I'm able to create music that makes people feel happy, that's worth gold. Doherty admits to not being a huge electronic dance music fan before her son got into DJing, but that has changed. Through watching Billy, Doherty learned that the electronic dance music genre is more expensive than she previously thought. She said when she tells Billy some of her friends are coming to watch a show, he says, "Don't worry, I'll throw in some stuff you guys are familiar with, and we'll mix in songs from the 80s and such so that his mom and her friends recognize some of the songs in this lineup." Despite having not any previous connection to electronic dance music, she now finds herself playing King Billy on Spotify when she gets in the car. She said one of her greatest joys is getting to watch Billy play. "It's incredible, as a mom, to watch somebody who's worked that hard," Doherty said. She said even though it's been years now, watching Billy change the vibe of an entire crowd and get them up on their feet and dancing still gives her the same feeling of pride every time. Billy's constantly trying to step up his game, and he said he's constantly listening to and studying different elements of music. He is working toward getting a formal education and currently has applications out to different music schools. When he thinks about his end goal, of course, headlining big events is in the picture, but he ultimately wants to play music with his friends. If I were able to create some kind of a community with my friends where we could just get to play together, that would really be the dream, Billy said. He said music serves kind of like another language for him and his friends, and it's a means of being able to express yourself and bond with others. It's a form of communication for them that doesn't involve talking. While Billy counts down the days until he is 18, his sister and mother look forward to him being able to play official shows at a proper venue. Our next story, jury finds Miles Tovar guilty of manslaughter for the death of his Breckenridge roommate in 2019. The Summit County jury found Miles Tovar guilty of manslaughter and first-degree criminal trespassing, but not guilty of two other charges. Story by Ryan Spencer. A jury found Miles Tovar guilty of reckless manslaughter Friday, March 8th, more than 4 years after he killed his roommate in a Breckenridge apartment. Tovar, who has spent more than a year in the Summit County Jail, claimed that he acted in self-defense when he strangled then-29-year-old Brendan Rye on November 6, 2019, leading to Kyle's death. But the 5th Judicial District Attorney's Office and Tovar said Tovar instigated the deadly confrontation and provoked Rye. Prosecutors charged Tovar, now 40, with manslaughter, a Class 4 felony, first-degree burglary, a Class 3 felony, and two counts of first-degree criminal trespass, a Class 5 felony. In addition to the manslaughter charge, the jury found Tovar guilty of a single count of criminal trespass, but not guilty of first-degree burglary or the second count of criminal trespass. Reckless manslaughter is punishable by up to 6 years in prison, and first-degree criminal trespass is punishable by up to 3 years. Judge Karen Romeo set a sentencing hearing for May 9th. Tovar's defense attorney, Dana Christensen, said that Tovar was disappointed by the outcome of the trial, but added that the jury has spoken. Christensen said he would have to talk to his client about whether an appeal will be filed. The two-week trial revolved around a confrontation between Tovar and Rye in the Grandview Drive condominium unit the two were living in while doing construction work there. Law enforcement officers and paramedics who responded to the scene found Rye, who died hours later, unconscious in the master bedroom with a gun under his body, according to testimony. Law enforcement officers testified that they found Tovar in the hallway of the condo with a bullet wound in his leg. Before the deadly encounter, Tovar was drinking whiskey in an adjacent condo unit, but had reportedly started to make the women who were staying there uncomfortable with his behavior. Despite being asked to leave, Tovar returned more than once that night to the neighboring condo, with one of the women who was staying there testifying that they locked him out but forgot to lock the door one time. When Tovar made it inside again, apparently looking for the bottle of Jim Beam, the woman living there said Tovar shoved Rye, who was escorting him back to their condo. The deadly incident reportedly happened about an hour later. In closing arguments on Thursday, Assistant District Attorney Joe Kerwin showed an autopsy photo of Rye's bloodied and bruised face on a television screen. "This was not a fair fight," Kerwin said. "That man took this young man's life." Kerwin argued Tovar started the whole incident, noting that one law enforcement officer testified that Tovar told him at the scene of the incident that he had gone to Rye's room to have a, quote, man conversation. Tovar's blood alcohol concentration was double the legal driving limit, while Rye had no alcohol in his system. He also noted that Rye was only 134 pounds compared to Tovar, who weighed 180 pounds and worked out. While Tovar says the two fought face-to-face, he was shot in the right leg, while Rye apparently had the gun in his right hand, which would require him to have shot Tovar while reaching across his body
in the most discombobulated way, Kirwan said. Prosecutors said Tovar admitted in interviews with police that he kept going back to the women's condo after being asked to leave, and it was reported in testimony that Tovar shoved Rai while refusing to leave, accounting for the trespassing and burglary charges. Christensen said Thursday in closing arguments that the prosecution had not met the burden of proof to show beyond a reasonable doubt what had happened that night. What is known is that Tovar was shot in the leg and had nearly been shot in the chest, as indicated by burns from gunpowder on his abdomen, Christensen said. The gist of his story is firm, Christensen said. Brendan put his hands on him first, then the tussle, then the shot. Christensen said that Tovar never changed his story of what happened that night and has always held that he only started strangling Rai after Rai shot him in the leg. He noted that there is no video or audio recording of Tovar's alleged man conversation comment to law enforcement. Even if Tovar said this, Christensen questioned what a man conversation means and said that neither that comment nor the alleged shove on Rai an hour earlier are evidence that he provoked the deadly encounter. The deputy district attorney, Ryan Cornegay, ended closing arguments Thursday by telling the jury that reason should lead them to the truth. In the almost 6 hours of interviews Tovar did with police after the incident, Cornegay said, "The story becomes more and more about Rai lying in wait." He also noted that, according to crime scene analysts, all the shots happened inside Rai's bedroom, not in the hallway or the threshold to the bedroom where Tovar said the first shot happened. "Who is the person who is coming after who?" Cornegay said. "Who is the person defending their life? It's not Mr. Tovar, it's Mr. Rai." Our next story, new entertainment pop-up in Silverthorne gives visitors a larger-than-life film experience. The LED Funhouse in Silverthorne is a pop-up that will last until the end of April. Story by Kit Geary. As the owner of a venue that hosts its fair share of DJs, 10 Mile Music Hall owner Todd Altshuler caught on to a new trend in electronic dance music where some venues had started using huge LED walls as a backdrop for performers. These LED walls brought a new, high-quality visual aspect to performances and oftentimes have the type of clarity and definition that makes people observing feel as though they are watching a 3D film. Altshuler soon found that the cutting-edge technology behind LED walls was reflected in their price. If you find an LED wall in the $25,000, you are considered lucky, as they usually go for $30,000 to $40,000. Altshuler had a conversation with a colleague who also works with entertainment venues, and they just happened to have an LED wall that was hundreds of feet long that wasn't going to be used until summer. Altshuler was able to secure the wall for a couple months, and after some thought, with his 7-year-old in mind, he decided he wanted to try and use it to create a family-friendly activity. He found an open spot that actually fit the enormous LED wall at the Silverthorne outlets. He signed a short-term lease, got the LED wall in the space, and from there, LED Funhouse was born. This is a pop-up experience that Altshuler plans to run until the end of April. The front room of the space will be an LED light showcase, and the back room is home to the LED wall. I call the LED wall the Jumbotron. It's enormous. It feels like one you would find in a major sports stadium. LED Funhouse has only been open since March 1st, and Altshuler said people are already loving the films it has hosted so far. "We've put on a Grateful Dead ski movie from Teton Gravity Research, and we made a safari movie that a local DJ actually did the soundtrack for," Altshuler said. The DJ behind the soundtrack is Madici, who also happens to play both and bartend at 10 Mile Music Hall. Altshuler said he was blown away by the soundtrack Madici created, which includes music and sounds that mimic noises of a safari, and said if he could nominate Madici for an Emmy, he would. Altshuler said numerous films will be shown on the LED wall, most of which will be 30 minutes long, with some that are a bit longer. One coming up is a Teton Gravity research film on mountain biking. There will also be shorter screenings and visuals on the LED wall. Altshuler sought to create a laid-back, lounge-type environment in the LED screening room that is perfect for families with young kids. He said the films shown will be family-friendly, yet he does advise parents to consider how their children will react to animals catching prey before taking them to the safari film. Tickets generally range from $10 to $19 for films depending on their length. Shorter visits to the LED wall can cost $5 to $10 depending on what's showing. The LED Funhouse is located in between the Eddie Bauer Outlet and the famous footwear outlet at 145D Stevens Way in Silverthorne. Check the website at ledfunhouse.com for the daily schedule as it varies. Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the Summit Daily. My name is Bryce Johnston.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.